is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting at all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation. Rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and wrong. Here is Steve Gruber.
Thursday on the Steve Gruber Show. Glad to have you here with me for the conversation today. We live in a world now where mere accusations and political pressure can lead to special counsels and investigations, even though there is no proof of any wrongdoing. That's what's happening currently with the Donald Trump administration. Now, a special counsel has been named. Robert Mueller, the former director of the FBI, will be in charge of an investigation into alleged collusion with the Russians during the Trump campaign, though investigations have been going on for months and there's not a shred of evidence that there's truth anywhere. The Democrats and the media have pushed so hard that finally, Rod Rosenstein, the deputy attorney general, caved in on Wednesday, announced he had named special counsel to investigate this alleged collusion or influence in the 2016 presidential election. He said, "My decision is not a finding that crimes have been committed or that any prosecution is warranted," which is nice, but completely irrelevant. It also comes after James Comey claims to have kept memos of conversations he had with President Donald Trump, where he says Trump talked to him about, you know, moving on from the Michael Flynn investigation. Of course, this happened after Flynn had been fired. And you know what a memo is proof of? Absolutely nothing. My next guest, Congressman Tim Walberg here. Congressman, welcome to the program as always.
Good to be with you, and it truly is interesting times around here.
It's disappointing to me. But let me start with this. Much more disappointing, the comments of your colleague, Justin Amash, who has apparently joined forces with the likes of Nancy Pelosi and says that impeachment is warranted if there's any truth here. Of course, there's no proof of anything being done wrong, which is why it's called a special counsel and not a special prosecutor, though the networks continue. Those that are opposed to Donald Trump use the term special prosecutor, although it's completely inaccurate. But what about Justin Amash, your colleague, your supposed Republican colleague who is using the impeachment term? I think it's remarkable.
Yeah, I'm not certain. I haven't talked with Justin about why he made that statement. I guess we'll leave it to him and his constituents who elected him to serve. But I've always felt that we have processes here that have worked well for the life of our country. And people elect me and others like me to do for them what representatives are supposed to do. And if indeed we're calling for special actions, it ought to come as a result of clear evidence saying we can't get to the bottom of it with the tools we have. We need someone else.
But there is no proof of that, and yet this is what's happening anywhere. And here's the problem, Congressman. The people's business will not get done. We're not going to see tax reform. We are not going to see Obamacare repealed and replaced. We're not going to see the business rate drop to 15% and spur this economy on. All we see is a frenzied attack on this president because the Democrats remain angry. And my question is there anything that people like yourself can do, or is it completely out of everybody's hands now that Robert Mueller is there, and that's it, and that'll be the complete distraction for the next 2 years?
That's my concern. When we look back on Irangate, the Iran-Contra issue, look back on Watergate, we look back on a number of things. It always ends up being a circus that takes place, and in the end, nothing much comes from it. But that is what it is. And so in the meantime, guys like myself are going to have to keep our eyes on the responsibilities we have and move forward, and that's with the tax reform issue, that's with the appropriations process, which infrastructure development, and yes, continuing to move the ball forward on the repeal and replacement of the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare.
This is exactly what the Democrats wanted. Stop the Republican agendas at any cost. It doesn't matter about the truth, not the truth. It matters not. It matters to them to stop the agenda, which is rolling back taxes, rolling back regulation, rolling back Obama-era nonsensical legislation, all of these things. Thankfully, Neil Gorsuch has already made it to the Supreme Court. And my understanding is we will get a replacement nominee from the president today to replace James Comey, who, by the way, was the most hated man on the from the Democrats right up until Donald Trump fired him, at which point he apparently became a folk hero.
Yeah, they of course, were calling for his firing. And it all changes. So, it proves it is purely political. Remember, that's the left side. They do not want what this country is all about. And that was what was so frustrating. They could not believe that Hillary Clinton would be defeated for president. So they thought they'd have the third term of Barack Obama to continue on the agenda that he put forward through fairly significantly. That didn't happen, and they're angry. And it shows up in town hall meetings. It shows up in the trying to shut down the efforts in our offices around the country. And it will continue. But I want your listeners to understand that America is still a place where people of goodwill and patriotism for America and understanding of its basic values can continue to move it forward. And so while we'll have hurdles to go over, yes, you're right, Steve. I mean, they're going to try to block everything. But that should not stop us from attempting to keep moving forward. And, you know, when I was in the White House with President Trump a week and a half ago, celebrating, and I think rightfully so, that we'd kept our promise, we moved forward the first part of the repealer in place, out of the House, sent it to the Senate. It's there now, and the pressure needs to get on our senators to do the right thing. We only need 51 votes to complete this process and get it to the president. And let's keep doing it, not back off. I think the other side will show themselves for who they are.
Well, they do every time, and I think that they're playing a very dangerous game. Be careful what you wish for. It's one thing to sit there and scream for a special prosecutor and bang the gong and clang, clang, clang. Now you've got a special counsel, not a prosecutor, special counsel, Robert Mueller. It concerns me that the Democrats are all cheering Robert Mueller, but then again, they cheered James Comey when he cleared Hillary Clinton in July 5th of 2016, and then they hated him after that. It's all about politics. But the Democrats must be very careful what they wish for, because if the people's business does not get done, if we do not get tax reform, if we do not secure our southern border, if we do not get the economy rolling in the way that people voted for Donald Trump to do, in the next election, it could very well be the Democrats that pay a high price like the Republicans did in 1998 when they fooled around with impeachment with Bill Clinton and ended up losing the House, and Newt Gingrich was no longer Speaker, and you know the rest of the story.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, and that's, again, why in a program like this, communications like this, we all want to make sure that our governmental system runs right, that people behave and do the right things, nothing is violated, but in the end, we've got to recognize that there are politics, and in the process of that, the right side has to move forward, and we're gonna keep doing that. And ultimately, I hope the people will see that one side is being obstructionist to a fault and at the expense of the success of this great country.
Again, I come back and I say not just one side. You've got John McCain, Lindsey Graham, and Justin Amash, among others, who seem just as pleased to be obstructionist and to attack Donald Trump any chance they get. Hold your thought right there, Congressman. We're going to take a quick break and come back with Congressman Tim Walberg from Michigan's 7th Congressional District right after this break on the Steve Gruber Show.
Taking a closer look at the stories that affect you most with a big dose of common sense.
Baby, do you understand me now? Sometimes I feel a little mad. But don't you know that no one alive can
All right, here's another little headline for you. Sheriff David Clark, you know him, of course, Milwaukee County. He's been on this program a couple of times. You know who he is. He has accepted a job to be the Deputy Director of Homeland Security, Deputy Secretary, I should say. Deputy Secretary of Homeland Security will be David Clark, leaving Milwaukee County, Wisconsin. So the president continues to move forward with his agenda on his way for a trip to Saudi Arabia, Israel, and elsewhere. That starts tomorrow. We're told he could pick a candidate to be the director of the FBI in the absence of James Comey now. Joe Lieberman, a name put up. He hasn't been in the political spotlight in a while, but was supported by both sides. He's a big guy who pushes this no labels group. You know, let's forget about Republicans and Democrats, conservatives, liberals. Let's move the country forward. And I wonder what Tim Walberg would think about that. Congressman Walberg, what would you think about Joe Lieberman if he were nominated to head the FBI?
You know, I don't know. I don't know Joe Lieberman well. I served in Congress here while he was still in for a couple of years. He is a guy that seems to want to work both sides of the aisle. He was repudiated by the Democrats when he took some steps that way before he left Congress. I don't know. I don't know his background. I still like Mike Rogers. I know Mike Rogers is on the list, on the short list, and hopefully Mike will be the one that'll come out of it, the good guy, Michigan guy, former FBI agent after the military, and chaired the Intelligence Committee here in Congress. So I think he's well prepared for it.
I guess we will, you know, we're going to have to continue down this path because from this point forward, everything has changed. We're about 4 months into a new presidency, not even, I suppose, 3.5 months into a new presidency. The Democrats act as if they're still in power because I'm sorry to say, Congressman, but the Republicans, you're getting pushed around by the Democrats on a daily basis, in the headlines, on news programs. You're not getting your agenda fulfilled, the one that the American people sent you to do. The Democrats, frankly, are pushing you around, and now it's going to be worse.
Steve, I'm going to push back on that.
Fair enough.
Don't get that mantra going. They are pushing, but we are winning. I mean, bottom line is, Affordable Care Act repeal, reconciliation bill came out of the House and came out in proper fashion. It's over in the Senate now. We've sent the bills over to the president, significant bills for regulatory reform, 28 he signed in the first 100 days. That's more than any president since Truman. Got to remember that. We're on track in our appropriations process. We finished the last mantra, last gasp of the Obama administration, always having CRs. We got that done out of the way with the right priorities in it. We're moving forward on infrastructure, development, tax reform. The stuff is moving from the House. Yes, we have a problem in the Senate because we have the Senate rules that I don't understand and don't accept, but that's the way it goes. But we're going to keep pushing. They're dragging their feet on approval of undersecretaries and the like. They're going to try to block everything. That's part of the battle. But we certainly have to unify, hang together, keep moving forward, and celebrate the wins that we do have. Remember, we have a Supreme Court justice. If there's nothing else, we have a Supreme Court justice in place that stands for all things that are right and proper in this country.
And that's a good start. But again, the people voted for border security. They voted for a better economy. They voted for rolling back regulation, renegotiating NAFTA, stronger military.
We got a better economy that's going. We got a border that has been more secure. We've had a radical reduction in the number of illegals coming across. In the spending bill, we put significant dollars for border protection enhancement and being able to pay for more boots on the ground. Nothing's perfect, but no, let your listeners know that what they voted for, they're getting an awful lot of, and it's under great duress. And yes, it is tough to get our message out when the media, you know,
no,
except for guys like you, are telling the Democrat line. And let's keep pushing. Grandma said it wasn't going to be easy, and it isn't, but it's worth doing.
No, I don't think I'm pushing the Democrat line, just to be fair.
No, you aren't.
No. But in the 5th Congressional District of Michigan, I'm concerned about the voters there and what they got, and if they got what they expected, because, again, today, Justin Amash stands with Nancy Pelosi and the obstructionists, because all of this seems to be nothing more than one giant distraction from the people's business, because the people's business, yes, you're pushing forward. Yes, there were 28 pieces of legislation signed in the first 100 days and three or four since. But in the meantime, this distraction takes away from any momentum there might be to get taxes lowered, to get security at the border, all of these things, you know, to get Obamacare through the Senate, which is going to be, you know, a lot of heavy lifting. How do you get there? How do you get there if you have this giant circus that's taking and sucking all the oxygen out of the room?
No, I agree, but it is what it is, and we have to keep moving forward. And guys like me, I represent a district, and I wish some of my other colleagues would just shut up, do the job, stay out of the media in making comments that really brings more confusion and problems. But they have their constituencies, I have mine. I'm going to do my best, and I appreciate the opportunity to get the other side of the story out. hopefully encourage some of our people that while it's tough duty and it's going to be ugly stuff going on here for the next 2 years, 4 years, or whatever, we don't have a choice. We've got to move it forward, and it's still a great country, and we have the principles of a great country, and that's what we need to put forward.
There you go. So, and I appreciate your point of view. You know, I've heard people on social media and elsewhere saying that every one of these people, whether it's Lindsey Graham or John McCain or Justin Amashu, whoever it may be, that are basically acting in concert to stifle the agenda that the American people voted for, that every one of those folks should face a primary challenge come 2018 or whenever they may be up for election again. I would not disagree with that, Congressman. I'll give you the last word.
Well, that's going to have to be a decision of each individual district. And again, I'm going to represent my district well, do the things I said I would do, and we are. I had a bill signed by the president yesterday that was a major bill that gave protections to people in retirement systems that the state can't take over them and not have the securities of ERISA to affect them like any other pension program. So
there
we're going to
go.
Keep working. Let me tell you one good point of news.
Hold on, you're
a sportsman.
Hold your thought there, because we have to get it in next time, Congressman.
Getting your day started with news from around the state and around the world. Common Sense Radio. This is the Steve Gruber Show.
All right, welcome back to it on a Thursday. A break, departure now for a moment from the headlines of the day to talk about you and your business and what it takes to, well, to, you know, to conquer the world. You know, I'm on my world dominance tour now, you know, just take it one day at a time. How do you end up ruling the world, so to speak? Red teaming, how your business can conquer the competition by challenging everything, is a new book by Bryce Hoffman. And Bryce is with us on the program now. Bryce, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Steve. Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you here. As a business owner, you know, I'm always looking for ways to figure out how to, you know, work my way ahead and make my mark, and of course beat the competition. You say challenge everything. What do you mean? Tell me about the book.
So red teaming is a concept that was developed by the military and the intelligence community after 9/11, Steve, to help them stress test strategies and make better decisions. And it was born out of kind of hard lessons they learned in Afghanistan and Iraq. And I became the first civilian from outside government to take this program for red team leaders that the U.S. Army has. And I've taken these ideas and shown people how they can use them in their businesses to think like their competitors, to figure out ways to do what they're doing better, and to become one of the disruptors in their industry rather than one of the disrupted.
All right, so I appreciate that. And then what do we do? What's our next step from there?
Well, the way red teaming works is it's basically based on the recognition that every time you make a plan as a business leader, every time you make a decision, a big decision as a business leader, that decision is based on a whole set of assumptions. And so red teaming works by breaking that plan down into the assumptions it's based on, then challenging those assumptions to make sure they're really true and to make sure that the plan you have is really the best plan.
Okay, so here's my question. What if you have a very small business? What if it's one or two or three people, you know, and you have your assumptions and you have, you know, a strong leader in the small company? How do you challenge your own assumptions, I suppose, is my question.
Well, it certainly is harder when you're a smaller organization, but there's a lot of tools that I talk about in the book that you can use even if you're a sole proprietor. For instance, you can simply find someone you trust, and I talk about the type of ways you can do this. You can find someone you trust to give you honest feedback. And you can simply, before you make a decision, you can explain it to them and ask them to think about it and try to poke holes in it. Try to argue that it's a bad decision, even if it's a good decision. Why would you want to do that? Well, by doing that, it makes you think a little bit harder about your decision. It makes you think about it from maybe an outside perspective, the way maybe your competitors would think about what you're doing. And then after they give you that kind of critical feedback, you'll either have the confidence that you really do have the right plan, or you'll modify your plan to account for what you've heard from them. That's one way that you can do it. Mm-hmm. Another way you can do it, even as an individual, is I talk about how you can take a plan that you're about to embark on and break it down, like I say, into the assumptions it's based on. And then I give a whole list of questions that you can ask about those assumptions to make sure they're really sound. And these are powerful techniques, Steve, that the Army developed, you know, to stress test their plans and strategies and to deal with a very complex world that they're operating in right now, obviously. But, you know, businesses are operating in a very complex world right now as well.
You know, so I guess what you're saying here is that don't wait to react to something. Be prepared to move in a different direction. I suppose if to break it down to a very base sense, what I'm hearing is have a flow chart that is continuous no matter what happens on a daily basis in business. You have a go-to next step no matter whether it's something you anticipated or didn't anticipate, whether it's something good that happens or something very bad that happens, you have a next step already in mind.
Absolutely. That's a great way of thinking about it, Steve. And let me give you another example of something that individuals can do even. And I mean, you can do this in a much more formal way if you have the staff to do it. But even as an individual, you can simply do this one thing. You can, if you're about to make a big decision for your business, before you pull the trigger on it, just take 10 or 15 minutes and stop and ask yourself, and if you got a couple folks you can talk to, ask this question. If this plan goes wrong, how could it go wrong? What is failure going to look like? And then work backwards from there. We call this a pre-mortem analysis. You've heard of a post-mortem analysis, right?
Sure.
You look at why something failed. This is a pre-mortem analysis. Before you do it, you ask this question, how could it fail and how would it end up failing? What do you get from that, Steve? You get two things. One is that'll show you the risks that your plan has, so you can go into it with your eyes wide open. But the other thing that it provides you with is signposts that you can look for as you execute your plan to see, wow, you know, if this happens, you'll remember, boy, that was the thing that led to this other thing that led us to get in deep trouble. So maybe we should pause here and recalibrate. Just spending a few minutes doing that can save you from months, years, and even a lifetime of hurt.
Yeah, I wish I had done that a couple of times, very notable times during my business career. Mistakes I made because I anticipated that it was going a certain direction. I didn't anticipate that there would be a problem or a hiccup or something would happen that was predictable, but I didn't expect it, so therefore I didn't plan for it. Predictable enough, I just didn't plan for it, and therefore it did cause some real problems for me. So having this flow chart, if you will, that no matter what happens, you have a next step, as long as you remain viable in an ongoing business, you always have a next step. As long as the lights are still on, you've got something you can do.
Exactly. And if you've already planned for it, if you already know, okay, well, this is what I've got to do if this doesn't work, then you're in so much of a better position, you know, to deal with that. And, you know, you look at, and all of us in business have had these things happen, you know, and if all of us can think of times when we thought we were making a great decision, seemed like it was the best decision in the world. But a few days or weeks later, we sit there and think, my gosh, how did I miss that? Well, this is designed to have that discussion with yourself beforehand rather than after. And so it's a lot more effective because it saves you from actually making the mistake. And, you know, if you look at the history of business, recent history of business, it's full of cautionary stories, a lot of which I talk about in the book. Like, for instance, Polaroid. People don't realize this. Polaroid in the 1990s was actually a market leader in consumer digital cameras.
And now?
But they had a discussion at the top of the house where they said, look, these digital cameras are cool, but we're only making about 15% margin on these, whereas our film business, we're making 70% margin. And they decided to double down on their film business and pull out of the digital camera business because it was hurting their film business. I mean, in retrospect, that was a colossally stupid move, and they went bankrupt as a result of that decision. But these were not stupid people, Steve. They were just in love with the profits they were making from their film business.
Well, no, I understand that. Hey, Bryce, where can people – I got to stop it there. Where can people find your book real quickly?
It's on sale now. Anywhere online in bookstores, you can get it anywhere. It's Red Teaming, How Your Business Can Conquer the Competition by Challenging Everything.
And there you have it. I greatly appreciate it, Bryce. Thanks for stopping in.
Thank you for having me, Steve.
Thank you so much.
Michigan, born and raised with Midwestern values and Michigan common sense.
Breaking news at this hour. Just passing the wire now. Roger Ailes has died. Roger Ailes ousted as the head of Fox News just in the last few months after allegations of sexual harassment and so forth. Passing the wire now, he has apparently died today. Roger Ailes, who built the Fox News juggernaut, one of the first high-profile casualties in the liberals' war on conservative media. He was 77 years old, was Ailes. Trying to get some information on this right now. 77 years old, according to media reports. I have no further information at this point. I'm sure it's going to come here quickly, though, as we sit here and watch this come out. It's a siren on the Drudge Report, as you can imagine. Here's a statement from Elizabeth Ailes. I am profoundly sad and heartbroken to report that my husband, Roger Ailes, passed away this morning. Roger was a loving husband to me, to his son Zachary, and a loyal friend to many. He was also a patriot, profoundly grateful to live in a country that gave him so much opportunity to work hard, to rise, and to give back during a career that stretched over more than five decades. His work in entertainment, in politics, and in news affected the lives of many millions. And so even as we honor his death, we celebrate his life. One must wonder, though, if the stress of what has happened to him and to Fox News over the past few months played a portion, at least, in what happened. Also, for those of you that are more musically inclined, I suppose, a Detroit a legend, I suppose, the lead singer for Soundgarden, Chris Cornell, also dead today at the age of 52 in Detroit. He gained fame as the lead singer of the bands Soundgarden and Autoslave, died at 52. His death is being investigated as a possible suicide. He had been on tour. He died Wednesday night in Detroit. Cornell's representative, Brian Bumbry, said in a statement to the Associated Press, Cornell had performed a Detroit concert with Soundgarden last night. I guess that'd be the last show for that. Bumbry said the death was sudden and unexpected. Said his wife and family are in shock. The statement said the family would be working closely with the medical examiner to determine the cause and have asked for privacy today. Detroit police spokesman Michael Woody told the AP Thursday that he could not release details about why police are investigating the death as a possible suicide, but noted there were basic things, this is a quote now, basic things observed at the scene. Cornell died at the MGM Grand Detroit Hotel. He said Cornell's wife had called a family friend and asked him to check on Cornell. The friend forced open a hotel room door, and found Cornell on the bathroom floor. The Wayne County Medical Examiner's Office will make an official determination about the cause of death. So, fast-breaking news again this morning that does not involve the president momentarily, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, back to the top story of the day, and that is a special counsel being appointed to the investigation of alleged ties, a collusion between the Donald Trump campaign and Russia, for which there is not a shred of evidence thus far after months of investigation. But don't let that stop the Democrats. They have an agenda to fulfill. Don't let that slow down CNN or MSNBC or the people that pretend to be journalists. They have an agenda to fulfill. You know, and seriously, Those on the left will dismiss the Secretary of State, the National Security Advisor, as liars without a shred of evidence if they come out in defense of Donald Trump. You saw that this week. Nothing else matters to these people but the agenda. They don't care about the truth or plausibility or the permanent damage they may and could likely do to the Republic, and they will never hold themselves responsible for any problems that result. The left never does. Instead, they will reinvent history, write the story to make themselves the heroes, despite their destruction of the truth thus far and the Constitution. They will burn the institutions of America without regard. They don't care about the Constitution. They claim they do, but they do not. They will do whatever it takes to get this interloper, this golden-haired, this guy with a golden pompadour, I suppose, until they get him out of there, they will not rest. He doesn't belong there. You know, it's always predictable behavior from Maxine Waters or Chuck Schumer or Elijah Cummings or even Hillary Clinton, for that matter. Their actions in pursuit of their political agenda is sadly expected. So let me be clear where I lay the blame today for much of this at the feet of John McCain and Lindsey Graham and Congressman Justin Amash and a horde of locusts trying to disguise themselves as journalists, also part of the problem. I caution you all, do not underestimate President Trump yet. Far too many people have fallen into this trap, but at the same time, do not underestimate how low his enemies are willing to go in an effort to destroy him and his administration before it ever really gets started. This could be a fight to the death, and I don't mean between Donald Trump and the liberals and the Democrats. I mean for the Republic. And no, I'm not exaggerating. These people are willing to go wherever it takes them. They don't care. And that is, well, frankly, that's damned dangerous for all of us. All right. Again, the breaking news at the top of this hour. Roger Ailes, the former head of Fox News, has died at the age of 77, passing away this morning. That, according to a statement released by his wife, Elizabeth Ailes. Roger Ailes, the controversial head of Fox News, ousted just a few months ago. Quick break and some final thoughts here on a Thursday edition of the Steve Gruber Show. Dude, we're on the radio. Stop making so much noise. You know, the mics are hot. Come on, Kowalski. Let's get it together. Try to train these kids. Don't sit there with a silly look on your face. It's a communications business. Say yes, Mr. Gruber.
Yes, Steve.
Yeah, there you go. All right. Do you bet at all?
I don't bet. I've been gambling one time in my whole life.
Well, you're in radio now, so you're going to be gambling every day.
With my life? With my life?
Something like that, yeah. Just gambling with your future. What'd you gamble on that one time?
Penny machines at Soaring Eagle Casino in Mount Pleasant, Michigan. Mm-hmm. I didn't do very well, but my stepdad won $150.
Did he share?
No.
Oh, weasel. Yeah, I don't gamble much either. The first time I laid a really big bet, I was in Vegas for some convention. I laid a bet on a basketball team, and Indiana beat, I believe it was Duke in the NCAA tournament. They weren't supposed to beat them by 1 point. I won big on that one. Then I bet the first year the Patriots played against the Rams. I bet on the Patriots during the Super Bowl, and I won there. So, you know, but I want to get you at the British bookies now. Are taking out odds on whether or not Donald Trump finishes his first term. 55% say he will not, and 27% say he'll be gone this year. The bookies in Britain are usually right about elections. They were wrong, however, about Donald Trump. That's why I asked you about gambling. How would you bet on that? Do you not pay much attention to it?
I don't pay too much attention to betting when it comes to those sort of things. I mean, when it's sports, those guys tend to be right because they do it so much. These guys do it so much too, but I don't think they're right. I think he finishes it out his 4 years at least.
Yeah, I mean, think you're right.
I don't understand why he wouldn't. That just seems blasphemy. Blasphemy if they were to make that sort of move. So,
all right. So, do you ever talk on your cell phone while driving down the road, Kowalski?
Always.
Can't do that anymore. You won't be able to. It's a new law in Michigan coming saying you can't chat on your cell phone. No more. Do you text while driving?
I do.
Not supposed to do that, Kowalski. You know, it's a safety
That's
Sam
bad.
Here.
That's bad. Hey, take it from me, Kowalski. Don't text and drive. Just be safe.
Kowalski says don't text and drive. Soon in Michigan, you probably won't be able to talking to your phone and drive. All right, you're off to school, right? You're going to go get an education.
Educate yourself. It's the best thing you can do.
Make something of yourself, Kowalski. That's what I'm telling you, all right? You, too, could be an intern at the Steve Gruber Show if you are willing to take the challenge. Remember, be bold, keep the faith, and always listen to the Steve Gruber Show. We'll talk tomorrow.